and the doctor, quite dead, some several hours later. The doctor was dead with old strangle marks around his neck. Mad King Ludwig, who was, there was an open question as to whether he was mad, he was probably just gay, was said not to have a mark upon his body. He died in shoulder-deep water, and yet was known to be a strong swimmer in his youth. That was the 13th of June, and I was just reading along, and it just doesn't make a hell of a lot of sense that I'm reading that today. 13th of June. But just one of those odd little moments. Odd indeed. His magnificent castle was meant to be an homage to Richard Wagner, and instead went on to be an inspiration for Walt Disney, Sleeping Beauty's castle. One never knows what one does, or one never knows the effects of what one does down the road. Instead of building a monument to Lohengrin, he built a monument that would serve as the inspiration for a monument in its own right to fantastical capitalist excess. How about that? Huh. But it is thought that Ludwig, far from being mad, was simply gay. And 130 years later, 7,000 miles away, people of quite sound mind gathered together in North Dakota and decided that they would brook that they could brook no countenance of a hatred born of religious madness. Isn't that neat? I'm so proud. North Dakota is one of those flyover states where the right-wing religion industry is supposed to have absolute sway over all things. But Cowgirl was right. They stopped the religious bigots smack dab in their tracks. There's only one thing that I would remind, and that is this. They ain't going away. You beat them this time, but they'll be back. Just like they went back and are coming back again and again with their little fetal personhood bill. Right? They don't quit. They have oodles and oodles and oodles of money, and the only thing we have on our side is our passion not to let them have the day. Okay, so I'm not quite so lost, Michael out there, Kid A from the chat room. I have for years called it going down and getting stuck in the wiki hole. It can make for some interesting browser history. How'd I get from Robert Oppenheimer to Charles in charge? And you know what? Only through the magic of the wiki can that question be answered. One of my new friends and hosts, while I was away, and I discussed this fact, she said, "Sometimes I am almost afraid to open Wikipedia, because I can look up and 4 hours will have been gone, and I will have no idea where I've been, or how I got there, but it will have been a lovely journey. We had a good laugh. Going down and getting stuck in the wiki hole, indeed, Michael. And that's beautiful. How did I get from Robert Oppenheimer to Charles in Charge? It can be done. Dr. John observing. So, North Dakota has no crime, homelessness, poverty, unemployment, I guess? They have time for that shit? Well, they did. And they got it thrown back in their face. And we have to give them at least a little bit of applause for doing that. God knows how many thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not perhaps millions of dollars were thrown away down north, down some rat hole in North Dakota to promulgate that toxic bit of hate. But the right wing doesn't consider money. You know, they're the same crowd that tells you, I'm a fiscal conservative. But when it comes to putting evil shit like that on the ballot, they do not wait 1 minute. They don't stop to think, you know, if we do this, we're going to spend $1 million putting this on the ballot and trying to get people to vote for it. And then we're going to spend another couple of million defending the damn thing in court, and it's all going to be taxpayer money. Well, all that fiscal conservative business goes right swirly down the tube. When they think there's something that they want to get their hands on to try to make, you know, it was billed as liberty, when in fact it was an infringement upon freedom. The freedom simply to be. You would like to hope that in moments like this, you see the beginnings of a movement to turn these reckless, irresponsible bastards out. You'd like to hope. And maybe it is. Jim apparently also familiar with Ludwig II. Linderhof, another home he built. The grotto with fantastic images in which he traveled by boat is incredible. He was Wagner's patron and became a recluse. Yeah. He wanted badly for Wagner to get to see the castle he built there, which it was not originally called Neuschwanstein. But Wagner died without ever having set foot in the place. Question of vocabulary coming along from Kevin in Colorado Springs. LGBTQ, what does the Q stand for? Hopefully not what it sounds like. Well, it does. Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, and queer. And I think if memory serves me correctly, going back to the magnificent days of Peter Godbold's pioneering work with Strictly Confidential, it actually can be extended to LGBTQQQ. I don't know if you're out there, Peter, but do I have that right? Lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgendered, queer, and queer questioning. An attempt to take in the entire universe of non-heterosex. So, yeah, that's what the Q is for. And it is not hateful. It is completely accepted terminology. Within that descriptive realm. Okay. Thank you, Dr. John. QQQ, exactly. Queer and queer questioning. And it's a little awkward verbally, except it doesn't get any better to say Q-cubed. You just get a little more lost. LGBTQ, QQ. Think of it as a hyphen in between the first two Qs. While they are far from safe, a blow was struck, in fact, for freedom yesterday, on Election Day, in North Dakota. 19 minutes past the hour. This is, of course, The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid. HeadOnRadioNetwork.com is our home. Our podcasting home is WhiteRoseSociety.org. You can also get the stream there. The stream is available on a number of other platforms as well, although we did notice some hiccups last night along the way over at iTunes Radio. But it's available at iTunes Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, Stitcher Radio, Stitcher, Tuner Internet Radio, and TuneIn Radio, available on your smartphone, which is a quantum leap forward in making internet-based broadcasting available or as ubiquitous as commercially driven terrestrial palaver. You know, the kind of stuff where Rush Limbaugh says that, my friends, the firefighters are not—they serve no purpose in America. They do not contribute to our economic expansion. That kind of drivel that sort of just fumbles and drools coming out of his mouth as he contemplates his next hit, or perhaps his next all-boys weekend in the Dominican Republic. And, there we go. We also have confirmation from Kate on the Front Range. QQQ, you got it right. And she says, oh, Kevin, it's acceptable depending on who is using the terms and in what tone of voice. Precisely. I do want to do a little house cleaning. Well, it's not really house cleaning. It's just, the nature of this program has been for a number of years, it obtains a sort of serial quality. And it does so because this is a manifestation of the future of media, such that people listen to the program at various times of their own choosing, which is at the heart of new media. You can, for instance, listen to the program live, or you can listen to it on the podcast, or you can listen to it on the 24/7 stream that rolls constantly over our streaming servers. That means that you're not necessarily listening at the same time someone else is listening, and thus your ideas and your contributions and your thoughts will strike you at a different time from when the program is live, which lends that sort of serialized effect to the program. And thus, I've got a bit of catching up from last night. This has been known to happen on more than one occasion. This comment comes in anonymously, and it is in regard to the story of Ms. Trujillo from California, who I reported to you last night, was on a kidney transplant list for a condition she has had since childhood and now requires a new kidney and has been on dialysis for 5 years and was punted off the kidney transplant list because under a doctor's care she had begun smoking cannabis. Cedars-Sinai Medical Center of California treated Ms. Trujillo like a social pariah. They informed her that she no longer could remain on the kidney transplant list. This is all just catch-up work. Insisted that she subject herself to weekly screenings of her blood or urine, I suppose, although I guess we can do hair too. Make sure that she is no longer consuming any of that evil marijuana. She was, in fact, compelled to participate in a 12-step program. And I didn't, the whole story, she's still not back on the list. She hasn't made it through the steps, I guess. Or actually, what it boils down to is she hasn't been clean for 6 months, even though she was never dirty in the first place. She doesn't know when her 6 months will begin running. After she's finally been... I mean, she really doesn't know. After she has been peeing so-called clean for 6 months, then the 6 months, and then she's back on the list, which is actually a punishment of a year. And understand, we are talking about a punishment. This is punitive. But I got a little bit of pushback from someone who will remain anonymous because of the strictures of those organizations, who said, I listened to the segment regarding the woman in California who needs a kidney transplant. The report sounded a bit as if NA or AA are responsible for her troubles and control of the outcome and in control of the outcome of her case. I shuddered at the tone of the description of the recovery process. The 12-step program has no opinions, no affiliations, nor requirements. There might be some in the audience, especially elders, who need the programs for drinking, drugs, including prescriptions, compulsive eating, or gambling. They would be scared away by such comments. Many die because of their ignorance. I'm a longtime listener and contributor and an expert on this issue with 32 years of abstinence from all of the above addictions. It was explained to me that Anonymous in the Ether needed to be so because those are the rules of the organization, that one must remain anonymous at the level of press, radio, and films, which I accept. And I try to foster, you know, the whole purpose of this exercise that's been going on for what will be 7 years in this incarnation in October. We have always tried to foster dialogue and discussion. I don't like it when we, you know, argue and get snipey with one another, because I like to think that we're a little bit better than the other side. But considered dialogue and discussion is both welcome and hoped for. And this is one of those moments. So, you know, I stand corrected to the extent that anyone felt offended by my having been offended that this woman was compelled into a 12-step program. But let us understand that her participation in some sort of counseling or group session or whatever, or perhaps 12-step program, is compulsory. If she wants to continue to live, she has to go and sit in the group meetings. Personally, I find that offensive in the extreme. I find that offensive from the standpoint of people who really, really have hit bottom and recognize that they are out, that they have no ability to control their addiction and therefore need something like one of the NAAA, OA, you know, things that end, organizations that end in A. There are people who really, really do need that. And none of us can safely say, oh, well, it'll never be me. Because you never know what happens in the incredibly rapid turnings of this little blue-green time machine hurtling through the universe, as noted. But to compel that poor woman, literally under pain of death, to attend meetings that she did not need, is a slap in the face, both to the people who do need it and to those who don't. For those who do need it, she cheapens the process. For those who don't need it, it forces upon them something that is not... The only way those programs work is if you go there by choice, not by compulsion. All the 12-step programs that end in A share that with one of the central tenets of Islam. For early on in that Muslim so-called holy book, there is the phrase which in translation, I have no idea what it is in Arabic, but in translation, it says, there is no compulsion in religion. And I think the existential underpinning of that is that religion that is compulsory is not religion at all, but hypocrisy. And it really is applicable across the board. This is, after all, Wednesday. It is prayer meeting Wednesday. I just kind of jumped into the chair and got going without going through the shtick about the blood-red carpet. But it is prayer meeting Wednesday, and it is worthy of consideration that the fact that there is no compulsion in religion true regardless of which religion one is participating in. That does not mean others do not try to compel. If, for instance, you grew up in the Deep South and you went to church because your neighbors went to church, and what would the neighbors say, then that is compulsion in religion, and it marks out the religion as inherently false. If you attend religious services because somebody will show up at your door, take you away, call you a heretic, and burn you at the stake, as Mother Church did to millions of people over the course of about 2,000 years, then there is compulsion in religion, and it is not religion but hypocrisy. If one, at the point of the sword, confesses that there is no God but God and Muhammad is his prophet, and makes said confession only because the point of the sword is at one's jugular vein, there is, in fact, compulsion in religion, and it is not religion but hypocrisy. If one goes to the voting booth and declares it to be the policy of one's state that a certain sect may declare red lights to actually be green ones, then there is compulsion in religion, and it is not religion but hypocrisy. I have probably strayed somewhat from my central thesis, but my point is that I do not wish people to think that I am issuing a blanket condemnation of 12-step programs, but rather that I am specifically pointing out that compelling a person who is not sick with an addiction to attend an addiction counseling program, it's not just wrong, it's hateful. And on top of, I cannot begin to express what would be going through my mind were I in Ms. Trujillo's shoes, knowing that a hospital addiction panel held my very life in their hands. I cannot begin to say that I would be responsible for my actions. But then again, to a certain extent, metaphysically, we are all in Ms. Trujillo's shoes, to one degree or another. We truly are. There are some truisms in those so-called holy books that are otherwise filled with a bunch of hate and hobgoblins. And one of those truisms is that not one, not the next minute is guaranteed. And it isn't. Not the least of which, because there's no one out there to do the guaranteeing. So I hope there's a I hope there's a little clarity on that. I was not trying to condemn 12-step programs, but I do condemn anyone who tells someone that doesn't need one that they must perforce attend. Is there some clarity on that? I hope. Sandra, just a little note, a little audio note to Sandra. I am trying to get something she is sending, and having a little bit of trouble, but maybe it'll happen this time. Repeated attempts have thus far failed. I do that, you know, multitask. It happens during the course of conversation, and I like to think that you wouldn't necessarily know that it's going on. Got it! Thanks, Sandra. Our anonymous writer has followed up. This problem presented is due to the judicial and healthcare system. They use 12-step programs as dumping grounds. Thankfully, sometimes it works for them. You are right. It cheapens the process and will likely shorten her life. As an aside, the programs are not religious, but rather spiritual, regardless of how some of the meetings sound. They are a reflection of the culture. Meetings abroad are so unlike the Christianesque here in the States. After all, we are a Christian nation, right? I agree with your outrage, but it happens to all of us. It's about all the freaking hoops we gotta jump through. Hear, hear. And Cowgirl, Patty, sent along the front page from the newspaper, from the Bismarck Tribune. She says, take a quick look at the front page of the Biz Trib today. Three, which is what the name of that constitutional amendment was not all the Reich tried to pull for the primary where they were sure nobody would show for. We had a way bigger turnout than normal. The fact is, on the right side, the rest of the BS the Reich tried to pull off is across the page on the link. The powers that be tried to force our amendment for medical marijuana into the prong of the primary, but we got that jumped to the November general. We didn't want it lost in the crazy. Oh my God! There, how about that? There was some more stupid on the ballot. No on the religious liberty, you know, and even that is a misnomer. Well, North Dakotans voted against religious liberty. No, they didn't. North Dakotans actually voted in favor of it, so that everybody could be religiously equal, and no one would get to run red lights. Measure 4, the Fighting Sioux. A yes vote would repeal Senate Bill 2370, which requires the University of North Dakota to continue to use the Fighting Sioux logo and nickname. It would allow the university to discontinue the nickname and logo. Guess what? In a moment of the decent respect for Native peoples, Measure 4 was yes. Measure 4 repeals North Dakota Senate Bill 2370, that says that the University of North Dakota has to keep calling itself the Fighting Sioux, even though there ain't no Fighting Sioux on the Fighting Sioux, and nobody asked the Fighting Sioux, who ain't fighting. I hope I'm reading this right, and it manifests as a little bit of dignity for a people who have been subjected to uncounted indignities. They also had an opportunity to abolish all property taxes in the state of North Dakota, where, in fact, as noted, they had in past years ground up some paved roads and turned them into gravel again. That, too, was rejected. 155,600 people cast votes yesterday in North Dakota. That was huge for North Dakota. A lot of naysaying. Measure one. I don't know what measure one was. Yes, but measure two, no. Measure three, no. Measure four was a yes that allowed them to stop spitting on the Sioux people. Very interesting. Thank you, Peg. Dr. John noting, bravo, North Dakota. I didn't realize the Fighting Sioux issue was on the ballot. They got them both right? Rockin'! I'm proud when so-called red states or flyover country or whatever get it right. Then this from David in South Carolina, one of our many Davids. Many poor people are, subject line, poor people are like stray dogs. Almost by new congressman, primary day 2012 in South Carolina. Many Democratic precincts were closed and moved yesterday, says David in South Carolina. For the primaries in South Carolina, voters had been moved to new precincts and none had been notified by the South Carolina Election Commission or their county voter registration office. My driver's license expired because they claimed I drove 5 days with no insurance in a car that did not even have tags. Nevertheless, I went and got my official South Carolina photo ID and was able to vote. Had to have long-form birth certificate, paper, those metal ones are not acceptable, social security card, electric bill, DD-214. Surprised you didn't have to have some sort of heraldic device showing, you know, 9 or 10 generations going back, David. After Nikki Haley in the South Carolina GOP gerrymandered me out of Jim Clyburn's congressional district, I've been put into the brand new GOP majority District 7. And look, I've got a great chance of losing a representative, Jim Clyburn, who has much power and experience in D.C., in favor of a thug such as Andre Bauer. Oh, my God! We've heard of him before! Bauer is also backed by a majority of the Christians in this new district. These Christians are also backing a Mormon for president for the first time because they just cannot vote for that Muslim. The Democrat running in the fall, Gloria Tinubu, will be poorly financed, and she has an African surname, dark skin, plus she's a PhD in economics, which alone probably disqualifies her from holding elected office in South Carolina. After all, John Spratt, who had an economics and philosophy MA degree from Oxford, you know, England, not Mississippi, was soundly defeated last time by a booger-eating tea cracker. Yes, who is likely to be David in South Carolina's new Congress critter? Yeah, Andre Bauer. This story goes back, and I remember it well, to March of 2010, when Andre Bauer, the lieutenant governor of the state of South Carolina, told the newspaper The State, or told an assembled meeting, I should say, that he wanted to lead in the conversation about what to do with all those useless eaters. Why shouldn't you have to do something? In government, we are too often giving a handout instead of a hand up. My grandmother was not a highly educated woman, but she told me as a small child to quit feeding stray animals. You know why? Because they breed. You're facilitating the problem if you give an animal or a person ample food supply. They will reproduce, especially ones that don't think too much further than that. And so what you got to do, you got to curtail that type of behavior. They don't know any better. Yeah. Andre Bauer, who wants to do away with food stamps, lest the poor folks, and understand when you say poor folks in South Carolina, what you're saying is black folks. It's all code. See, I think one of the reasons that the right-wingers in Virginia weirdly assumed that sea level rise was liberal code is because everything that comes out of a right-wing Republican's mouth is code. You're facilitating the problem if you give an animal or a person ample food supply. They'll reproduce, especially ones that don't think too much further than that. And you gotta curtail that type of behavior. They don't know any better. Right. Yeah, that's going to be David in South Carolina's new member of Congress. This in from Kate. Crosstalk with Patty. Way to go there in North Dakota. I've been following your news. We're in such a mess over here in Helena. The crazies here are out in force. The super PACs from back east are piling on money to our representative nominee for Senate. Teaster is going to have a big battle. Congratulations again. North Dakota rocks. Signed, Kate, west of you. Jim asking, what is the connection between freedom of religion and not regarding traffic signals? Do not comprehend. Do not try, Jim. You are taking your mind into a scary, ugly, moss-laden swamp full of gators and snakes and things that snap and bite. And don't try. But what it was a constitutional amendment that was written so broadly that anybody could claim religious liberty as an exception for violating the law, including traffic lights. Andre the Fool, says Jim. Another one who disregards traffic laws, among other life-protecting statutes and human dignity. If you feed them, they're just going to breed. My grandma understood that. His grandma also probably went to some lynchings with a picnic basket. By the way, Patty, you'll be pleased to know that the news out of North Dakota reached as far as Memphis. Fritz in Arkansas noting, the Memphis CBS affiliate, WREG-TV, WREG, pinned an editorial and was all head up about the changes of the mascot at the University of North Dakota. What was worse was that I saw this on Twitter at lunchtime today and responded. another example of right-wing manipulation of the media. WREG Memphis, asking by editorial, thank you for it, is the NCAA bullying schools into changing mascots? North Dakota voters have, for now at least, cleared the way for the University of North Dakota's athletic teams to drop their controversial Fightin' Sioux nickname and logo. North Dakotans voted 60.5% to 39.5% on Tuesday in favor, man, that was a stomping, of a referendum measure that essentially gives the school the power to drop the name, which it has sought to do to comply with an NCAA campaign targeting Native American nicknames. Oh, Mr. Orwell, could I see you for a moment? Yeah, paragraph two, George. Oh, I do an NCAA campaign. What is this NCAA, Bob? Oh, I see. An NCAA campaign targeting Native American nicknames. Couldn't one possibly say that it was an NCAA initiative aimed at ending bigotry and discrimination in the nicknaming of its member organizations? Might that be actually more appropriate, Bob? Yeah, George, I think so. That's why we keep you handy. A years-long battle over the nickname probably ain't over, says WREG. With supporters hoping to force another vote, this time calling for changing the state constitution to mandate the name's use in November. Jesus Christ, you're kidding. I told you, when it comes to trying to force their bigotries onto the people, there is no limit to the amount of money these so-called fiscal conservatives will waste on ballot measures. A constitutional amendment? Really? To enshrine the appropriation of the ethnic name of a people who have nearly been driven to extinction? Yes. The issue stems from the NCAA's long-standing efforts to get most Native American nicknames and logos out of college athletics. In 2005, the NCAA ordered almost 20 schools whose nicknames and mascots it deemed abusive in terms of race, ethnicity, or national origin to either get Native American permission to use their names and likenesses or come up with new ones. NCAA said schools continuing to use such nicknames without permission would, among other things, be prohibited from hosting NCAA championship events. Although one tribal body, Spirit Lake, supported the Fightin' Sioux nickname, another group, the Tribal Council of Standing Rock Sioux, did not give its endorsement, so the North Dakota Board of Higher Education agreed in 2007 to retire the nickname by August 2011. But some North Dakotans, including the Spirit Lake group, objected, and the state legislature passed a law in early 2011 requiring the university to use the Fightin' Sioux nickname. What is that that the Republicans are always saying about how they want to get government off of our backs? And yet, you know who's driving this. This is not, this constitutional amendment is not driven by a bunch of liberals. Suddenly, having big government on our backs, well, you know, just hook on the piton and get climbing, Republicans. Right up here on my back. University of North Dakota Alumni Association and Foundation opposes the nickname. They say the consequences of keeping it extend beyond NCAA sanctions. This, again, according to WREG. It says that recruitment is suffering in part because some other schools, including Wisconsin, Minnesota, and South Dakota State, won't compete with UND's teams over the issue. good God. We... I have to get a drink. The Spirit Lake Committee, Slooker, the Spirit Lake Committee for Understanding and Respect, which is among the nickname supporters, argues that the name and logo represent the Sioux people in North Dakota history well. I don't see how... Well, Bill, it's 4th and 23 for the hapless fighting Sioux in their 0-11 campaign thus far this season and the continuing efforts to find a victory. Now, I don't know. The UND may be a damn fine football team. Time's winding down on the fighting Sioux. Well, it might be appropriate. We as North Dakotans have many great schools in our state. Each has its own pride and traditions. UND is no exception. The Fighting Sioux is to UND as Coke is to Coca-Cola. What is this, the LSAT? The name here has become the branding of UND. Oh, my aching back. And so we find out that in the for-profit media of WREG, Memphis, that apparently there is absolutely nothing whatsoever going on in West Tennessee, or the market that it serves in northwest Mississippi or east southeastern Arkansas. Ain't nothing happening. Because WREG has plenty of time to pen an editorial about the voters' decision to disenfranchise bigotry in one of its school's nicknames. You gotta take the bitter with the sweet, I guess. Marty, simple question. DD214? Yeah, he had to take his honorable discharge to get himself a photo voter ID to prove that was really him. Jim, Andre the Fool. Indeed. Corey, in the Free State of Louisville. On the Fighting Sioux, the Senate bill was in response to the NCAA rule stating that member institutions may not have as mascots images that are disrespectful or offensive to certain peoples or language to such. Member institutions could still use those team names only if the minority group agreed to it. Hence, there are no more college teams called Warriors, Indians, Redmen. Teams such as Florida State, Seminoles, and Utah Utes are still allowed to keep their names. In the case of North Dakota, one tribe of the Sioux agreed to let the university keep using the name, as we noted. They, like the Seminoles, saw it as giving honor to the tribe. The other tribe that was required to give permission declined to take a vote on the issue, as in they didn't vote yes or no. The NCAA, because both tribes didn't agree to it, they're forcing North Dakota to change their name. As an aside, says Corey, completely apart from this issue, I think it's a stupid rule by the NCAA, mainly because the NCAA has declined to deal with the one major school who has, I believe, a patently offensive logo and stereotype, which has also carved into it a special exemption for it to take place in any mythical national football championship in the form of Notre Dame. Notre Dame gets a pass. Although I did see that a friend of mine on Facebook was pushing for sanctions against Notre Dame. I mean, really, the fighting Irish? What about the drunken Irish? What about the potato-eating Irish? Fighting Irish? Please. Thanks, Corey. Kate don't get it either. What does being queer have to do with running lights? No. It's just that they have the constitutional amendment allowed them to have the freedom to run red lights and hate the queers. And the liberals. As long as they said Jesus told them to hate the liberals or the queers or run the red lights. That's how broadly the stupid thing was written. Robert in Australia, phase five. In yesterday's mail, I received, as did everyone else, a postcard from the Australian Electoral Commission. It reads, "Count me in. Enrolling to vote is compulsory. Visit the AEC website to enroll now. Your vote is a valuable thing. Make sure you're enrolled to vote. Go to the AEC website. Complete the form. 3. You're ready to vote. Paper forms are available at your local post office." "And not a long form birth certificate in sight," says Robert. "And we're still using paper ballots at every election." There are some countries on this planet who are not water-boweled afraid of democracy. Australia, it appears, would be one of them. This coming in from Bill. "That goober in South Carolina..." It's catching on. "Sounds like that goober has come up with South Carolina's version of Planned Parenthood. God help us all." Bill in Helena. P.S. Kate is absolutely right concerning our own goober, Denny Rehberg. Rehberg? Yeah, he's a goober. Kevin with a suggestion. "How about the University of North Dakota fighting Custers? If they want history, here's a name for them," says Kevin. "University of North Dakota 7th Cavalry. University of North Dakota land-grabbing white people. University of North Dakota disease-bearing Europeans." "University of North Dakota genocidalists." See, I don't like any of those either. What's wrong with wolves and tigers and cyclones and wheat shockers, hay chuckers, whatever it was that Albert... Well, they're out there shucking their hay, whatever it was Albert said the other night. Yeah. And, of course, yes, last night did begin the NBA Finals. Wherein the Oklahoma City Thunder, who gave a little ground in the middle of the second half, came back and finished quite convincingly, taking out LeBron in the Heat. And I didn't mention it last night because there really wasn't time to, but Marty had suggested along the way that we all read Dave Zirin's latest column, which was titled something along the lines of "Know Thine Enemy, Who to Root For in the NBA Finals," in which Zirin catalogs in exquisitely gross detail in some places the myriad reasons for rooting for the Miami Heat over the Oklahoma City Thunder, many of which I agree with, pointing out what a nasty, shitty bit of business the people who bought what were then the Seattle Supersonics did to the people of Seattle, how they held them hostage over a new taxpayer-funded arena, and ultimately... Can you imagine? I think I even remarked on this when it happened. Can you imagine you're working in management for the Seattle Supersonics and you get a call saying, "You know what? We're moving to Oklahoma." And you're thinking, Seattle, Oklahoma, Seattle. I got to find a new job so I can stay here. I don't know how many Sonics are still on the Oklahoma City squad. I don't know. But you can't imagine it was a pleasant transition. I can't imagine a more stark transition. lush and green, progressive and hopeful, and you move from that to flat and dry and hot and disaster-prone. Has there ever been a tornado in Seattle? Yeah, I didn't think so. Has there ever been a tornado in Oklahoma City? You don't have enough fingers and toes. But, no, so LeBron walked away in defeat from Game 1. Do we get Game 2 tonight? I don't know. Dr. John noting, there was a protest club at Notre Dame, if I recall, that pushed this as an alternate nickname. Even printed T-shirts, redneck iconography, the Fightin' Whites. Why not? It's been good enough to do it to Indians for a few generations. Why not? It's time for our top of the hour break. It's time to close out the filibuster. It's time for your calls, assuming you wish to pursue them. And it is also time for me to remind you that we have added to our abilities the ability to take calls via Skype. So in addition to the ordinary call-in numbers, which are 877-443-2366, that's 877, the numeral 4, head-on, and on your nickel, 304-658-3333, you can also reach us via Skype now. And that number is not a number. That number is, in fact, a handle. And the handle is simply Bob Kincaid Horn, H-O-R-N, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D-H-O-R-N. And that's how you reach us on Skype. And the Skype is up and hot. So Sandra suggested a few minutes ago when I was trying to get it, Sandra suggested this little bumper, a continuation from last night's foray into the 80s funk new wave band, the Bus Boys. An ode to LeBron James. I got it, and now you're going to get it. This is America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn. We'll be right back.
Too bad the coach won't make the Ahead means preparing for the future of our children, our grandchildren, and our wild, wonderful West Virginia. Developing our renewable energy resources is the best way to ensure a clean, sustainable way of life and safe, good-paying jobs for generations to come. Here in the Mountain State, our most abundant energy resource is the wind. Our ridges and majestic mountain peaks shape and direct the wind like stones in a mountain stream. Coal River Mountain is the ideal place for developing wind power. The Coal River Mountain Wind Farm will provide us with a source of clean energy and good jobs forever. We have the power to make our future happen now. Be a part of the clean energy solution for West Virginia by visiting coalriverwind.org or call 304-854-2182. That's coalriverwind.org, 854-2182.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Twelve minutes past the hour on this 13th day of June, 2012. Prayer meeting Wednesday, absent the altar call, but we've still got an abundance of prayer meeting Wednesday material. In addition to the usual lineup of weirdness, right-wing hackery and flackery and bizarrity. Also had some good news in on the ACAC today. Got a note from Thomas saying he had made contact with two different members of the Ohio congressional delegation. One of them being Kim Ryan, an excellent member of the House. And the other, forgive me, Thomas, I read your email and I don't have it right here in front of me. There it is. I contacted Tim Ryan's Youngstown office and asked him to co-sponsor the act. I referenced the solicitation letter that was sent by Dennis Kucinich and Louise Slaughter. The office took my personal information. I will be in his district come November. I contacted my representative, Betty Lou Sutton, Akron office, asking her to co-sponsor the ACE Act. I referenced the solicitation letter that was sent by Dennis Kucinich and Louise Slaughter. The office took my personal information. I was told that the person that handles this issue would contact me. He was apparently busy with other matters. I'm still waiting on the callback. Thank you, Thomas, in both instances. Thank you very much. And I will transmit this information on over to the other members of the ACE team so that we can make sure that we reach out to Mr. Ryan and Ms. Sutton's offices. With great haste. That's how it works. It's that easy. You contact your member of Congress, and in turn, we follow up telling them that we know that they have had constituent support for their support of the AIC Act, which will end what the New York Times referred to as Appalachia's agony. A correction in from Dr. John. I screwed up, he says. The fight in whites was at the University of Northern Colorado as a protest of all Native American mascots, including North Dakota. See, that's how it happens. One little trip into the Wikipedia, and the next thing you know, you're reading about Charles in Charge. The Fighting Whites, alternatively identified as Fighting Whites, Fighting Whiteys, or Fighting Whiteys, were an intramural basketball team formed at the University of Northern Colorado in 2002 and named in response to the Native American mascot controversy. The intramural college team briefly attracted a storm of national attention because of its satirical protest about stereotypes of Native Americans being used as sports mascots, particularly the Fightin' Reds of Eaton High School in Eaton, Colorado, not far from the university in Greeley. The Reds mascot has been described as a caricature Indian with a misshapen nose, wearing a loincloth and eagle feather. The intramural team, this is brilliant, the intramural team, which included players of Native American, white, and Latino ancestry, adopted the name Fighting Whites with an accompanying logo of a stereotypical white man in a suit, styled after advertising art of the 1950s. Why not? Why not? Thank you for the correction, Dr. John. So, just as a bit of a follow-up, so that we can, and you know, you probably know about this, but there was a really, really good piece done at Think Progress by Travis Waldron yesterday about how sports teams hold cities hostage, threatening to move the team if a new stadium has not been built. Because, and you see, it's important to understand what's going on here, because this is a direct progeny of the race to the bottom model of attempts by various and sundry state governments to lure industry to their states with tax giveaways. Greg LeRoy did pioneering work on the subject in a book of several years back called The Great American Jobs Scam, I believe was the title, in which he carefully documented the practice of state governments, well, the practice of industries, to get state governments to bid against one another in an act of vilely un-American competition, to see which state would give away the most of its commons in exchange for jobs that were often not even that good in the way of jobs. Two of the leading offenders in this business were Cabela's and Bass Pro Shop. Anywhere you go in America, if you see a Bass Pro Shop or a Cabela's, you know that state and local government have given away the farm in order to have those retail outlets there. There are two Cabela's, for instance, in West Virginia. The deals were negotiated, of course, by Blanche Manchin, which pay insanely low taxes. You know why? Oh, this is a beautiful little dodge worthy of P.T. Barnum himself. They pay insanely low taxes because they've got a couple of stuffed bear and singing trout on the walls. You know, that motion sensor trout that, you know, you walk past it and, hello, my baby, hello, my honey, hello, my rectangle. Oh, no, that was a frog. Yeah, they've got a couple of stuffed bears and singing trout and therefore, under the law of the state of West Virginia, they qualify for a very, very low tax status because they are deemed to be, wait for it, museums. Hey, honey, let's go over to the Cabela's Museum and see the bear and buy a compound bow. Yeah. Well, having seen the success with which that met, professional sports franchise owners, loath to let a good thing go, decided that they, too, could pit one city against another, one state against another, one region against another, in an effort to get humongous chunks of the commons for themselves. And thus, under this report by Travis Waldron at Think Progress, foul play, five cities that want taxpayer money to finance pro sports stadium boondoggles, we get a really good idea of what, for instance, the ownership of the Oklahoma City Thunder did to Seattle. Dave Zirin does note that the Seattle Supersonics, the Sonics, who had a rich basketball tradition and a perfectly good arena, were held hostage, and ultimately that team's was executed in the name of moving it to a land of drought and religious bigotry. The five cities that are most involved in stadium and arena boondoggles are as follows: Minneapolis, Santa Clara, Washington, D.C., Atlanta, and St. Louis. The report does not mention the city of Pittsburgh, which damn near broke itself building PNC Park and Heinz Field. Lovely facilities. Don't make any mistake, these are fantastic edifices. But the owners, in every instance, have all the money they need to build it. But you know how it is. It's a lot more fun to go to Vegas and gamble with somebody else's money. In Minneapolis, after years of fighting, Travis Waldron writes, the Minnesota State Senate approved a stadium deal handing Minneapolis's Minnesota Vikings $348 million in state subsidies. Minneapolis itself will contribute another $150 million in public financing. They have, of course, recently built a new baseball stadium for the Minnesota Twins. They used a new sales tax to do that. Funny, those fiscal anti-tax conservatives are nowhere to be found when this crap is going on. Santa Clara, California, has promised the 49ers more than $878 million in public funding for a new stadium to replace the stick. And they place all of their reliance on the public not being gouged for this on promises that stadium revenues will make it up. Really, $878 million the city of Santa Clara thinks is going to be made up in popcorn sales. Popcorn and weenies are going to be really expensive. And, of course, you find that out. You know, $5 hot dogs, $10 cups of beer that make for, you know, say, mom, dad, mom and mom, dad and the two kids. Let's say they want to go out to the ballpark. Oh, let's see. It's going to be about $35 a piece to get in, so that's $140. The kids want a hot dog, so we're at $150. They want a pennant or some little gym crack, so we're at $170. Dad and dad, or mom and dad, or Mom and Mom, would like to have a beer or a glass of wine, so suddenly we're approaching 190. And that's for the cheap seats. There's a reason I love minor league baseball. You can get in and out for $100 instead of $3. Not that I go to minor league baseball either. That's a trip down the mountain. Ground has been broken on the stadium in Santa Clara. Then there's D.C. They recently built a stadium for the Washington Nationals, for which they are still hemorrhaging. And now, and I mean no disrespect to what the rest of the world calls football and we call soccer, Major League Soccer's D.C. United want a new facility that costs $157 million, and that's before they even buy the land. That's just the building proposal. City officials have expressed willingness to fund new infrastructure projects to serve the stadium. You know, roads, parking lots. DC United has, of course, threatened to move to Ballmer. Should the people of the district, who are, of course, manifest examples of taxation without representation, not knuckle under on the deal. Then there's the Georgia Dome. A host of Super Bowls, the Peach Bowl, all manner of, at one point in time, the Sugar Bowl during the year of Katrina, when the West Virginia Mountaineers, my beloved Mountaineers, went down and stomped the guts out of the Georgia Bulldogs. I mean, it's a pretty prestigious stadium. And lo and behold, though, it ain't good enough, the Georgia Dome. I mean, it's only 20 years old. But Arthur Blank, the owner of the Falcons, says, nope, want a new one. And we're going to rely on $300 million of taxpayers' money. Where's a good fiscal conservative when you need one? Not to be found. Oh, but look, I'm a job creator. I'm going to create me some jobs selling peanuts and popcorn and Cracker Jacks. And I mean, we're going to be creating some jobs. Right? And then there's St. Louis. Who paid for a new team, a new dome, to keep the Rams in St. Louis. It cost taxpayers $126 million. With interest and everything, it comes out to $720 million. The Rams entered into a 30-year lease, but 17 years in, they ain't happy. They want renovations to the stadium. Because they got them a clause in their contract that says the city of St. Louis has to keep the dome as a first-tier stadium. Whatever the hell that means. As a counteroffer rejecting the demands of the Rams, the city of St. Louis offered the Rams $48 million in public subsidies. So, let's see. 348. This is kind of like adding up the weenies and the popcorn and the Cokes and the beer. 348, 1,521 million. That's $1.5 billion on the five teams that I just mentioned to you. In an America where we're constantly beaten over the head with the notion that, well, we can't, we gotta lay them teachers off. Them government workers. Cause see, it's better when they become popcorn salesmen at the stadium for 16 games a year. Cause that's job creation. No. We need us a new stadium here. They gonna go to Oklahoma City like them damn Thunderations done. If we don't build them a giant stadium with a gobbledygod-awful huge big screen TV in the middle for the punters to hit, and a big old jail. The largest jail in the NFL is at the Jerry Jones Taj Mahal somewhere near Dallas. Publicly funded, I might add. You know what? I think what we ought to sell off at their hospital and just tear the sumbitch to the ground and build us a new stadium for the soccer franchise that nobody goes to see. No free market here, baby. Free market would indicate. Free market would indicate that if these owners want a new stadium, they by God ought to pay for it themselves. Ain't happening. Ain't happening. Hang on a minute, Andy. Well, that explains why you weren't getting through. We had a power blink, and I've got a dead UPS over here that needs its battery replaced. Oh, that's an interesting noise. Okay, so the phone system's booting up, and you will be able to get through. Yes, I do remember Ron and Raleigh. Remember, Bob, a stadium boondoggle was how the inept dim leader became a multimillionaire, not counting his trust fund. And he stole the land to build it on, and the Texas Rangers play in it to this day. Marty noting, yeah, Santa Clara, that figures, the new 49er stadium. $878 million! No, San Jose wasn't on the list, Marty. And, okay, I'll ask if that happens. Okay, let's try that. Before we go to the regular phone lines, though, we've got a call waiting on Skype. Are you there, Vince?
Yes, I am.
Hot diggity.
Sound good?
Sounds pretty good.
I like this new Skype thing.
Isn't it handy?
Yes, very. I hope you don't mind if I hijack your program just a little bit.
No, I did get your mail earlier today, and I wanted to make sure that we addressed that.
Well, this is even better than that, actually.
Oh, dear.
Well, better or worse, depending on your point of view. You're aware that the zombie apocalypse started, I'm sure.
I've been following those stories. I even saw the photo of the poor soul from Miami, and Jesus God.
Yeah. Well,
and somebody with vampire teeth attacked somebody out in California or something the other day.
Yeah, and I hate to say it, but the law enforcement community is starting to react with all the finesse of a sledgehammer. A friend of mine works for a, one of those tobacco smoke stores, that you run into every once in a while. They sell, the pipes and the loose tobacco and the rolling paper and all that good stuff.
Yeah, right.
Well, he had I don't know exactly what the details were, but basically the police raided his store, arrested him, and charged him with a felony. And he's just a clerk at the store.
What?
Gee. Mm-hmm. Apparently one of the products they were selling has what they have classified as a class 1 narcotic, just the same as heroin or anything else. They won't tell him what it is, just that apparently one of the products that his store sells...
So the clerk is on the hook for this?
Not the owner, not the manager, not the manufacturer, the freaking clerk. Pardon my language.
Jiminy Christmas. Well, the problem with the zombie apocalypse stuff seems to be intimately associated with something that is routinely referred to as bath salts.
Right. No, this wasn't bath salts. This specifically had something to do with an incense they sold. Was all he really knows about it. But
the other side of that coin is that some of these pseudo I don't even know what to call them. Some of these synthetics have also been marketed as incense, and so they proliferated here like mushrooms after a spring rain, until steps were taken to get them off the market. And one of the things that happened is, having gotten the incense off the market, they reappeared as bath salts. And what happens is, because they are complex formulations, you make one formulation illegal, and it's the burglar, lock, mouse trap conundrum. Because these things are synthetic and combinations of a number of drugs, then you just take one out and add another in, and suddenly it's not illegal anymore.
Right.
But to subject the clerk to this?
Oh, it gets better. Not only are they charging him with a class 1 felony, and like I said, they're not even telling him what the drug was, because it's not a matter of public record until after the court case is closed. So they're telling him what the charge is, but they're not telling him the nature of the charge. The other issue is... they basically just came into the store, confiscated the product, arrested him. He had to spend the night in a holding cell, was arraigned before a judge, and they set bail at about $10,000.
Oh, God.
Makes me glad I moved out of Florida.
Well, George Zimmerman's wife was charged with perjury yesterday. She had $74,000 in her account when she was telling the judge that she was broke.
Mm-hmm. And what did they set her bail for?
Five.
Oh, Jesus.
She walked.
Well, he's out now, too, but I mean, the fact of the matter is, Jesus Christ, come on.
Well, what? Right, the clerk. I mean, the guy, a convenience store, right?
Kind of a setup like that. I mean, it's not really a convenience store. It's a smoke shop. That's specifically what they do. We got them all over. We got them all over Michigan up here too.
There's one over in the little Wally World, the shopping center, the thing. I think here in West Virginia they're called Smoker Friendly, and they sell cigarettes and pipes and tobacco, and they're own blend of roll your own stuff, like you mentioned. Yeah.
Yep. It's one of those joints. And I mean, like, you know, he got this job. I used to work with him for, you know, he used to be a tech guy with me at the company that I work for when I was down in Florida. But I don't know what the circumstances were why he left that job, because it happened after I moved, but he got this clerk job at this place, and, you know, he has no control over anything. He just shows up, punches a clock, you know, sweeps the floors when they tell him to sweep the floors, and watches people to make sure they're not stealing stuff when they wander through the store. You know, it's not like he's in any way, shape, or form responsible for what these guys do, but they're basically charging him like he's some sort of kingpin. That's how they're treating him.
Jesus Christ.
And I mean, this is a class 1 felony. I mean, forget the jail time associated with this. You know, as far as it's going to look on paper, if he actually does get convicted for this, you know, he's going to look no different in the eyes of the law, you know, compared to, you know, one of these Zeta cartel nut jobs who are running around decapitating people and leaving body parts all over the highway in Mexico.
In bags, yeah. I Stunning. But then again, this is the hysteria that, well, look, Florida was not, there was not a, it never was heard a discouraging word in the case of Trayvon Martin for damn near a month. Right?
Mm-hmm.
But the state can get hysteric over, you know, a clerk in a tobacco shop, because that's easy. That's easy.
Low-hanging fruit.
Sure. And, you know, the prosecutor will go to the guy and say, listen, you plead to a low-grade felony, and you're only going to go to the state penitentiary for 1 to 3. Because he knows that at best that guy has maybe a public defender who might only have 1,000 cases in her caseload. Right?
Yep, something like that. I haven't had much of an opportunity to talk to him. He basically, I get the impression from talking to him, from what little I have, that he is not too concerned necessarily with his own defense. I get the feeling he may know somebody who's going to help him out as far as that's concerned. But his biggest concern is, Jesus Christ, I'm just a clerk.
Yeah.
And if they can come in and get me for this, who's to say they can't just start raiding these shops willy-nilly and just locking up a bunch of people who's
well,
only
for all, and for
a freaking
for,
job?
For all he knows, for all we know, they are. These kind of things seldom happen in isolated circumstances. They don't do one guy. They sit around down at the police headquarters and decide, especially in election years, remember, that they're gonna bring some law and order, and so they run wide-ranging sweeps. If this has happened to one guy, odds are it's happened to a dozen.
I'm just so mad about this whole stupid situation. Of all the crap we got to go on about all this, you know, a freaking clerk who's only, you know, they talk about these people ought to get jobs. Well, here's somebody who had a job whose only crime was going and clocking in on time that day.
Yeah, and it's not like it's a... And I even hate saying this. It's not like it's a place that caters specifically to that. It's,
even if it was, if they're operating in the bounds of the law, what's it freaking matter?
True that. No, but what they do, I mean, this is... Florida is notorious for being a state that kicks people while they are down. Because that's what happens when you turn your government over to the right wing and the 1%. It's what makes it a terrifying place to even contemplate.
That's one of the reasons I left.
I mean, I think about some of the horror stories that Juanita has told us over the years. The bureaucratic miseries that she put up with, just trying to keep a roof over her head. You know, I know the stories that Guy James told from time to time. And you're sitting there, you know, that's not a state, that's an asylum. And then if you really want to have some fun, you can just read the works of, because they're just broadly drawn parodies of, you know, ripped from the Florida headlines kind of stories. You can read the novels by Carl Hiaasen and Tim Dorsey. And nuts. Nuts.
Absolutely insane. So, I just found out about this not too long ago, and that was one of those things that had me just had to come on and vent about that. And if any of you guys know anybody who know anyone who works in smoke shops out there, for the love of God, warn them, because this ain't funny.
Yeah, no kidding. But the thing is, the one thing that we kind of need is some degree of specificity as to what the product is, or how it's marketed, or, you know, because I mean, the guy might not even have you probably know better than I do, might not have even been necessarily aware that this shit was on the shelves until, you know, Officer Friendly comes in and says, I need a package of that back there.
That's exactly what happened. As a matter of fact, everybody who I've talked to about this, well, it's all about the bath salts. Well, the undercover cop who apparently came in and bought the stuff did it before the whole zombie thing down in Florida got started. So this was underway before the whole bath salt slash K2 slash spice slash whatever they're calling it was even, you know, in the national picture like it is now. So it's not like it's a response to that.
And imagine what it will be now.
Hmm. And the thing that scares me most about this, just in terms of, you know, the general sheeple population is, you know, let's just say, for instance, this does end up somehow on some sort of headline and everything. You know how they're going to spin it, you know. We're working to get this stuff off the street so our kids aren't running around gnawing people's faces off, and they're going to paint him like he's some sort of freaking kingpin or something, and the people are going to get behind it, and they're going to try him in the court of the media before it ever even gets to trial.
Right, indirectly. Right?
I don't know, man. Like I said, I just...
You know, you do a paragraph about the zombie... And then you do a paragraph about the dude selling incense.
Stuff like this makes me absolutely sick.
It should. You know, and I think the point is most salient, this is a guy who's going to work. This is not one of the Zetas, as you noted.
Whatever.
Leaving bodies along the side of the road somewhere in northern Mexico.
But according to the law, there's no differentiation. Which gets back to the whole Jesus Christ, how many people do we have in our prison system who are guilty of nothing more than smoking a little ganja after work? This is absolutely insane. It's modern-day slavery.
Well, it's one of those things that if the human race manages to survive for a couple more centuries, they will look back and say, man, they were sick.
Mm.
And, you know, one of my little goals is just to be one of those people who isn't sick. And it's the same with you, Vince. Yeah, just try to be a little bit more humane.
Hmm.
I mean, I'm not trying to make everything about me, but, you know, odds are that the chances are that the little Belgian bastard who ripped me off was probably supporting some kind of a habit. And odds are that that was the whole purpose of it. So. Look what our addiction problems do in this country, and look what our insistence on treating them as violent, as equivalent to violent crime, gets us. There's nothing like sending an addict to prison to learn how to be a better criminal, because that's what our prisons are, after all, right, Vince? They are criminal.
Oh, yeah,
they're criminal universities.
They certainly don't go in there to rehabilitate them.
No. No, there are story after story, some of them very close and personal within the Horn family, of what happens inside the so-called criminal justice system. It's not a criminal justice system, Vince. It is a criminal injustice system. It's a system that is designed to punish and manifest, as I have said on a number of occasions before, to manifest this nation's neo-Calvinist proto-puritanical fetish with punishment, so that we can look at somebody who's down on their luck and getting steamrolled by the criminal injustice system and say, ah, but see, look at me, I'm one of the good ones. There, but for the grace of God, go I. But I have the grace of God, so look at me. That's how it works.
Yeah. Well, while we're on the subject, you brought it up earlier, the email I'd sent you. I thought that was kind of hilarious and kind of nice.
Yeah, just kind of snapped a photograph you snapped in a parking lot, right?
No, actually, I was driving to work, and he was just going past me, and I just looked, and I was like, I looked back, because, you know, you're driving, and you're trying not to get distracted, so I just kind of, I see this big, for the folks, obviously, who haven't seen this, I'm driving to work one day, and this big Cadillac Escalade, just this big honking SUV goes by me. And I look over, and I go, oh, novelty plate. And I look back, and then the brain processes. And you're like, blink.
No,
blink.
It doesn't say that. Yes, it does say that.
Bob, I'll let you give the punchline.
Okay, so Vince sends me this picture today. And it is. It's a great big honking, probably $60,000 Cadillac Escalade that probably gets every bit of 8 gallons to the mile. And the vanity plate on it, it's a Michigan plate. And it says, because, you know, you've got to make it all fit in like 7 or 8 letters. What was it, Vince? GLBLWRMR?
Yeah, something like that.
Global Warmer. Hey, look, I'm helping killing the planet, and I'm so proud of it, I paid extra to put it on my plate. Hot diggity damn! That's I watches the Fox News. Of course, they don't talk like that up there, but same thing.
No,
I just don't do the Michigan accent worth a damn.
You know, it's...
It all ends up sounding like Sarah Palin.
Yeah, that's the problem. You've got a little bit too much of that Minnesota, but it's kind of hard to say. It's kind of like a cross between Minnesota and Canadian, if you can imagine that. Please don't try it. Makes the brain hurt.
Yeah, right. No. I just generically leave it redneck because that's the internal workings. Burgundy in color, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yep, kind of a dark reddish, you know, maroonish color.
Did you get an idea? Did you get to see how many people were in it?
No, it had tinted windows, and like I said, we were on the expressway, and he passed me, and, you know, I was like, gotta get a picture, okay, catch up, snap picture, okay, back off before somebody sees me playing with phone. You know, kind of one of those deals, but I saw it, and I was like, I've got to get a picture of this, because this is so funny and not all at the same time.
Excellent. But I just love it because I'm willing to put a wager out there, Vince, that Cadillac Escalade had one person in it.
Oh, I wouldn't take you up on that bet. Not at all.
And seldom has more than three?
Probably also accurate. Again, would not take that bet at all.
And let's see, probably has this is America. If people are so godforsaken stupid that they want to throw away $125 on a fill-up, they're welcome to do it, I guess. But it gets atrocious mileage. Probably has something that it probably has either a 25 or 30 gallon tank, right?
Something like that, yeah. But to me, it's more the whole, hey, you liberal asshats, or something along those. I can't do the accent as well as you can, but you get my point.
Yeah, I'm on my way home to check my alerts from Free Republic while I'm watching the Fox. Yeah, that's that's America, Vince, where ignorance is something to proudly display on the rear bumper of your vehicle. Global warmer.
Yeah, if you start to do anything, next thing you know, you just have somebody, you know, you start talking sense and reasonable, and somebody just kind of stares at you blankly, and then when you get done, they just look at you blinking twice and go, nerd!
That's about the size of it. Well, you doing all right, Vince?
I'm doing fantastic, sir. It's wonderful to talk to you. I've been getting settled in pretty good, been listening to the program a lot more, and... got some other things going on that I hope to be able to talk about a bit more soon, but not quite ready yet.
I understand completely. Maybe, I don't know. Let us know if there's a repeat of the Wendy's Frosty story, if that translates to Michigan.
Well, yeah, we do have Wendy's up here. We have Coney's up here, which are even funnier.
But the question is, do you have Fundies?
Oh yes. Oh God, yes. Oh, God, like you would not believe. We actually had, I think I told you this in one of the last times I called, we actually had Pastor Terry Jones up here.
Oh, yeah. Didn't he hang Barack Obama in effigy or burn him or something recently?
Something along those lines, and you know.
Because, you know, he's a practitioner of the religion of peace.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't understand how all these people go to church every day to worship with the long-haired hippie Jesus guy.
Palestinian. Don't forget the Palestinian part.
Yeah. And then turn around, go home, and, you know, they see a guy, you know, just sitting there playing his music or something, and tell their kids, no, you don't want to be like that commie scumbag hippie over there.
Oh, no. Well, Vince, I hope we will hear more from you, and don't
definitely
be a stranger. All right.
Definitely not. Take it easy, Bob.
You too, Vince. Later.
Bye.
Making use of the new access via the Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn is the contact handle. That's our buddy Vince. So by all means, let's keep things rolling here and go back to the regular telephone. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob, can you hear me?
I got you, Andy.
How you doing?
Pretty good. How about you?
Fine, thanks. Hey, I have a public service message.
Yes?
Since you get out west quite a bit and have some people in Montana, you know, there's a movement to try to make that Citizens United case they have out there with a 1912 law that they had to keep our corporate funds out of their elections. They're trying to make that a states' rights issue. So,
And it is. I remember spending the better part of an hour a couple of months back on the program talking about the fact that their Montana Supreme Court had expressly stated it was a matter of states' rights and had rejected Citizens United. And the scary thing, though, Andy, is that it is now before the Supreme Court of the United States and the rats.
Well, there's a group of lawyers, one guy named Mayer, and there's another guy, too. Somebody, I think he actually had something to do with the Silkwood trial. He was the lead lawyer. They call themselves the team. And they're trying to get Schweitzer and their attorney general named Bullock to file a brief challenging the Supreme Court's jurisdiction in the appeal of the case.
Oh, that's very interesting.
So if people just call Schweitzer's office and Bullock's office and ask that they sign up and file the brief challenging the Supreme Court's jurisdiction, that would give them some standing, I guess, to get the wheels turning.
Well, and so what would that? I mean, would that be a separate action from what's already on appeal? Because wouldn't that, if it did go up, wouldn't it have to be? It would A, have to make its way through the federal system, and B, it would then probably most likely be consolidated with the current appeal, would it not?
I'm not sure if the current appeal is actually in appeal, because I think they might have had some problems with all the judging on the Montana court, the Supreme Court, because I think they agreed in principle, but they didn't want to disagree with the Supreme Court, something along those lines.
Well, I mean, I know that unless there's been a subsequent development of which I'm unaware, the ruling stated explicitly that the Supreme Court's ruling in Citizens United did not apply to a state statute passed by the legislature of the state of Montana, and in so doing, and the interesting thing, it was Republican judges who said that, and the dissenting voice came from the presumable liberal who said, "I hate Citizens United as much as anybody, but the Supreme Court is the final arbiter of the law of the land under Marbury versus Madison and its progeny." And thus I cannot join the majority. But it was issued as a final opinion, and in fact, when it was accepted for argument, when the petition was accepted by the Supreme Court, I believe it was Justice Ginsburg who celebrated that fact that the Supreme Court would in fact hear it, because she said it offers an opportunity for us to undo the pernicious business done by Citizens United.
Well, that would be good. I kind of heard something today where she was backing off a bit.
Oh, really?
From where the Supreme Court, the majority of the court had gone with that. I could be mistaken, but I think she might be backing off.
Well, if it was a law passed by Congress mandating saving kittens from burning trees and burning houses, and it went before the rats, I would not trust them to reach the right decision.
No doubt about it. But anyway, my understanding is that they needed Schweitzer and Bullock, the attorney general, to sign up to this brief.
Well, if you can find any follow up on it, I'd appreciate it if you'd send it along, because we will that's certainly something that deserves to be clarified and brought to people's attention.
Well, Schweitzer's number is 406-444-3111. just tell him to please file the brief challenging the Supreme Court, and box number is 406-444-2026. I've already called myself. They're very nice. They just, you know.
Okay, the area code and exchange are the same. It's 40 what?
406.
I'm sorry, 406?
406.
Yeah, 406-44...
43111 for Schweitzer.
And that's the governor. And the other one is?
406-444-2026.
For Bullock, who is the Attorney General, correct?
Attorney General. Right, right. So that's my public service announcement.
Good, good, good. Good work.
Do you know Peter B. Collins?
I met him actually a long, long time ago when we went up to broadcast live from the mall in D.C., my first trip to D.C.
Right. He's, a very progressive talk show host. He does an internet show too, more of a podcast type of show, although he does go around part time, doing talk shows when people aren't available for the mainstream, like a Tom Hartman he substitutes for Norman Goldman sometimes. But he's really pushing this hard because he's big on the Constitution and he'd like to see Citizens United overturned. So he's behind this 100%. You go to his website, peterbcollins.com, you can find information about it.
Okay, okay.
One of his recent podcasts, he gives a written synopsis of all his podcasts. From one of them about the team and this lawyer named Mayer, and there's some other heavy hitter lawyers that are involved with this, trying to help out. Anyway.
Cool.
He's one of the guys pushing this hard.
Excellent, excellent.
So, I just wanted to give a shout out to Mark in Florida.
Yeah.
On your Friday show. Gosh, from the time he had, that was the greatest expose of what you can figure is going to happen. Mr. Romney gets in.
It was absolutely brilliant, and for that reason, and I'm glad you brought it up, Andy.
Great.
If folks want to hear it again, you can always go to the archive. But our good friend Horzak, otherwise known as Horst, clipped it out and made a post out of it at his YouTube channel. So that if you go to YouTube and search for user Horzak, you will find it there.
Great. Great, because Mark did a great job. I can't believe today I saw an article that Romney is actually trying to position himself to get the middle class vote, that he's a champion of the middle class.
I referenced something being Orwellian earlier. Well, the whole Romney campaign, Andy, is Orwellian because it to sit there and say, I mean, because we ran the story. He's Barack Obama wants more firefighters, teachers, and police officers, and I don't. And then yesterday it was just another case of, look, down the memory hole it goes. Oh, I didn't say that. Of course I like teachers.
Right.
And the for-profit media yawn.
No, a lot of people don't understand. We are in an austerity program here because of what's been happening to public sector workers.
Right. 700,000 public workers, 720,000, Andy, with their jobs gone? Yeah, that's austerity.
Since Obama has been in office, it's over 600,000 gone, both municipal, federal, and state. And if you go back to 2008 when the recession started, it's over a million. We've lost over a million workers. And most other times when you have a recession like this, you hire state, municipal, and federal workers to jumpstart the economy. You don't kill it with austerity.
Right, but the right-wing approach to it is to stop, is that, if it's on its knees, then it's not far down enough, and you give it a good kick in the head to get it all the way onto the ground, and then you start stomping.
Right, just kick it in the butt more. Just kick it and snuff it out. That's what they did. They snuffed out any kind of recovery.
And they did it, and we know it because of that story that broke, what was it, earlier in the week or maybe late last week on Friday, that's been documented in this book, this meeting that was had by this this cabal of right-wing Republicans who sat there and openly strategized, well, not openly, it was a secret meeting, but, you know, the cat's out of the bag, but they strategized and they plotted how to bring this government to its knees, and in conjunction with that, how to destroy the American economy for nothing more than their own wicked political the ambitions.
Absolutely.
You know, because they couldn't stand having that one in our White House.
100% right. They just want the power. That's all that matters, is having the power so they can wield that big club. And, you know, they'll just tear us apart.
Precisely.
But like, the Bush years were bad. It's going to be a living hell.
Well, and again, you know, if you can say President Romney without your bowels just turning to water, you're made of sterner stuff than I am.
Oh, mercy.
Because, you know, I know I do, and I know for sure you do, have profound issues with President Obama. But I don't kid myself into thinking that President Romney is the cure. Unless we just assume that the only cure available is suicide.
It'll be hell on wheels. It will. It might be time to bail out. Like I did in the 90s.
Hey, I got my free learn German app on the phone, and I've been learning all kinds of words every night.
Yeah, they need people there. They're hiring like crazy. They seem the economy was doing well. It trails off quite a bit lately. They were taking in a lot of the Spanish,
yeah,
young people for a while.
You know, I get all these ads in the email every day, Andy, and one of them I got today said, what was it? 2 nights in Paris and 4 nights in Barcelona, only $500, including airfare. And I'm thinking, I'll pass on the 4 nights in Barcelona. Things might, but then I thought again, you know what? I'll probably get myself gassed or sprayed or something, but, you know, a little solidarity. It's a matter of globalizing these objections to their globalizing of our existence. But I don't
know. That economy out.
Yeah.
So what'd you think of Jamie Dimon today?
Oh, wasn't that just disgusting? Although I did like the fact that there was a little noise made behind him.
Yeah, you feel that cool air going up your rear end?
Well, it smelled a little more like smoke.
Right, he was just blowing that smoke up everybody's rear end in America, man. What lie? A hedge. What they did was not a hedge. It was pure speculation. There's no question about it.
Yeah, hedge my ass.
Right, they're taking an index of credit default swaps, which means you make a bet that bonds are going to either default or they're going to go down in price considerably because they're in trouble, the company. And they were investing in a CDX.NA.9 something index of credit default swaps, and they were selling it short, meaning instead of betting that this basket of 120 bonds was going to go down in value, they were betting, because they were selling it short, that it was going to go up in value. How is that a hedge on Europe? And then they're playing chicken with a bunch of hedge funds who are buying it long. The hedge funds were buying this index of credit default swaps, betting that the bonds would go down in price, and that would make the index actually rise. I don't want to get too complicated here, but so these guys are selling on the J.P. Morgan side, and they kept on selling and selling and selling, and the hedge funds kept on buying and buying, and finally it just exploded because they took the wrong position. They lost so much value because this index kept on rising on them while they were selling it.
You know what, Andy, you said, and you do a magnificent job of explaining how it works. But you remind me, because there's always room for a movie reference on this program, that maybe it's time for us to all sit down and watch that magnificent old Eddie Murphy, Dan Aykroyd vehicle, Trading Places. You remember that, where Eddie Murphy's a homeless guy, and the two 1%ers bet a dollar that they can take him and replace their hotshot trader and make him just as successful as the hotshot? You remember that?
Yeah.
And it all centers around, I think, what was it? Yeah, orange juice futures.
Yeah.
And it's an object lesson in the nature of the dirty insider trading and the speculative nature of those markets.
Right.
And if I understand you correctly, what happened is that speculation got moved over into a commoditized commoditized wads of bad debt. Is that fair?
Well, it went the wrong way, because they were speculating. When you do a hedge, you're doing a trade-off. You expect investments that you own, assets that you own, to be negatively correlated with what you're hedging it with. When one goes up, the other should go down. They shouldn't work in unison, but they should be opposite.
So that you maintain a sort of stasis or equanimity, right?
Right. So they equal each other out, and you don't gain or lose. At least you should have a pretty high negative correlation there, one going up, the other going down. So they balance each other out. But that's not at all what was happening here. It got to a point where they were just purely speculating, selling this index short. You had this guy, Bruno Ipsil, some French guy in London, and his boss, I read articles, but his boss was just going crazy, pushing J.P. Morgan to continue the trade. And he was just running roughshod over the people in New York. And the CIO, or a risk officer, chief investment officer, this woman, Ina something, I forget her name now, but she quit over the whole, but they ran over her, basically, and just kept on this trade going when they should have bailed out a lot. Ina Drew was actually her name. She lost her job. But they just ran over her. And there was no risk management of this process. It was just pure speculation. They thought they could play chicken, and they were just going to play chicken with the hedge fund and try to wear them out until the trade changed in their direction, and it never did. Never went their way, unfortunately. Because they were shorting, and they had to have this index go down, but the index kept going up the wrong direction. They kept on losing more and more money. Anyway, it is just a crime. He's there trying to say it's not a hedge. I mean, it's not speculation. It wasn't proprietary trading. It was a hedge. It was not a hedge. That's a lie. Pure speculation. That division had made billions of dollars in trading profit. It was a proprietary trading profit. It's total baloney. Total BS. Did you hear Bitter? Oh, we don't need regulation. I'm against regulating.
Yeah. I just wanted to send him back to his nanny prostitute. David Vitter can't open his mouth without... I'm surprised he has the nerve to speak.
What corruption? What sort of corruption that he's even... It's shameful in the United States that he's even in the Senate. What shame? Hey, he just brings complete disdain and, other disgust that he's even in the Senate. Now, what a piece of garbage. The guy should be in jail somewhere or something. Get out of here. A man like that being in the Senate, please.
Yeah. But remember, IYAR, Andy.
Yeah. You're a Republican. You can do anything you want.
Over on the House side, remember, Anthony Weiner didn't even actually have sex with anybody.
Well, they had to get rid of him, man, because he was the big single-payer guy. He was keeping the pressure on.
Oh, he got run.
Right. They ran him out of there, I think, because of the single-payer stuff. He had to go. He was just too loud. and he was making a lot of the Blue Dogs look bad.
Well, and I mean, one of the last things he did was, you remember when he mockingly told, when he mockingly told John Boehner to celebrate and enjoy his name?
Yeah,
you do that, something's going to happen. And of course, that entire manufactured controversy happened very shortly after he made fun of John Boehner's name. Oh, by the way, I don't know if I mentioned it or not, but that was one of the delightful little moments of merry giggling that went on in Germany. Because I looked at my new friends, my hosts, and I said, "I am going to spell you a German family name from the United States. And I would appreciate it if you would be so kind as to give me and choose any region of Germany you wish." You know, because they kind of made light of the Bavarian accent, for instance, the kind of way I make light of, you know, redneck accent. I got an idea that there was almost a direct one-to-one correlation, but I spelled out Boehner, Andy.
Yes.
And there were two of them, two brilliant young women sitting there, and from different parts of the country. And one of them said Boehner, and the other one said Boehner. And I said, "Now this is good network standard pronunciation." "Oh, absolutely." They said, "Why, Bob? How does he pronounce it?" I said, this is the third most powerful man in the government. He explained who the speaker is. And they said, "Ah, we understand. How does he pronounce?" And I said, "Boehner." And he's proud to talk about his German heritage. And they said, "Well, he does not know much about his German heritage if he pronounces it Boehner."
Yeah.
And they kind of made that face, Boehner. And we had a big laugh.
Yeah, Boehner, something like that would probably be the way I would think.
But Boehner is closer than Boehner. we all agreed on that. Hey, Andy, it is good to talk to you, my friend, and I hope we will talk soon.
Yeah, just one other thing. I had to honorably disagree with Albert over the drones. You know, I just can't get behind the killing of U.S. citizens with drone strikes without having some kind of due process.
No, I believe that due process is in order.
Right.
And moreover, the one thing that bothers me most is even if it is an intractable response to an otherwise intractable situation, if the false choice is either we go in with boots on the ground and all-out war and Tomahawk cruise missiles and yada, 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 or we use the drones. The fact of the matter is, when we use the drones, we're still killing children.
Correct.
And I don't know if anybody's explained this to the president, because there's not a secretary of Jesus Barack, you know?
Right.
I don't know if anybody says, because, you know, we tried to point this out all during the years of the Iraq War and when George was managing the Afghanistan debacle. We on this side said repeatedly over and over and over again, every time a father carries the 5-year-old limp, lifeless body out of some wreckage, we make certain that there will be, at some point in the future, whether it be to 1 or 1,000, another 9/11. We don't make it more likely, we make it certain.
Right. Yeah, totally agree. We're not making friends. So when you go after Anwar al-Awlaki's 16-year-old son, too, you know, somebody that should have nothing to do with terrorism, I mean, that's, to me, that's just going way over the line. I don't necessarily worry about Obama, but wait till some real hardline right winger gets the presidency again, starts doing this stuff. You know, we have another Dick Cheney running around making these calls. That's what's really scary. I mean, he set the groundwork for this. And that's the scary part. You're not going to have Obama in there or a Democrat.
Right. I mean, but you know what? The Obama administration use of drones will be, without a doubt, used as justification for ramping up the use of drones. And we will be carrying dead members of wedding parties out of Afghan and Yemeni rubble. We won't see it because the for-profit media won't report it. But it'll be happening with much greater frequency, and we will be that much more hated.
Yeah, you can bet on it. All right, thanks a lot for letting me vent.
Thanks for the input, Andy, about Montana. I really appreciate it. You have a great evening.
Yeah, a little public service notice. Take care.
Absolutely. Bye now. Calling from California, that's our buddy Andy. Going back to Vince's call, Kate notes, good to hear Vince. And she said, oh, I do need to know if his Frosty melts while the folks ahead of him pray up at the drive-up window pray. I think of him every time I pass our local Wendy's. And she notes, you know, Skype sounds better than most cell phones. So, onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Bob.
Sandra.
Hey, so, I just wonder if you checked out that short video I just sent you.
I haven't been able to simply because, it's kind of hard to run video while I do some multitasking, but not a lot.
Oh, okay, well, no, it's a really, succinct sort of explanation of, the Euro mess. It's the best one I've heard.
Okay, so it's a minute. Shall we run it?
Yeah, because I was like, wow.
Okay, stand by. By the way, this comes under the title Spain, the Beginning of the End.
Right.
And it comes from Daniel Hannan, who's the MEP for Southeast England.
Yeah, I think this is at the European Parliament. Again.
Okay, so MEP, yeah, Member of European Parliament. Okay.
Yeah.
Here we go.
Madam Deputy Speaker, it was only last July that we had these stress tests of all the European banks, and we were told that there was no problem in Spain, certainly none that the national government couldn't look after. We've now had a bailout of 100 billion euros, and Spanish 10-year bonds were at their highest level yesterday since the single currency was launched. So the only impact of this bailout has been to indebt every Spanish household with a further 15,000 euro debt that they didn't have last week. And where has the money come from? It's come from the other members of the Eurozone, including Cyprus and Italy and so on. Europe is giving itself a transfusion. It's taking blood from one arm and pumping it into the other arm. But the tube is leaky. The liquid is coming out en route. My friends, when are we going to understand that you don't solve a debt crisis with more debt? The euro is the problem, not the solution. We're treating the tumor when we should be treating the patient.
Rather profound.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. You look at the result of these sort of, debt swapping things, like swapping spit, and you're getting nothing because the yield, the cost of the debt that they're trying to sell on the open market is still above 6, which is the whole idea is to bring those prices down because it's not sustainable.
And so, I mean, ultimately, when he talks about Cyprus or Spain or Greece or Italy.
Already.
Right. Well, I guess the question I have to ask is, are we finding out via this experiment, Sandra, that the only way this works is if the nations participating in the currency are inherently stable in the first place?
Well, and also if you agree to a fiscal union, too. I mean, this is the whole issue with it. And that means you're talking, I mean, the thing is I'm not too sure where the hell they think they're going with this.
Yeah, so perhaps we could... The question of having a non-sovereign currency but sovereign debt, and the two don't match.
Yeah. I mean, Spain is going down the same route as Ireland. You see the state of Ireland after repeated bailouts of their banking system, by putting the debt onto the government account. I mean, it's just a horror show. I just saw that clip and thought, you know, this is just such a nightmare for, well, the Europeans for sure, but also the ideology is just sort of eclipsing all rationality. It's stunning.
And the other thing, I just saw this pointed out in the chat room, and I thought it rather fascinating. And that's what Benedict at Large pointed out. He said it's not just that the tube is leaking, in Mr. Hannon's analogy. He said it's that somebody is drinking the leak and getting rich off of it.
Well, at some point, though, I think, you know, they're going to have to confront some debt, some serious debt write-offs. I mean, I just don't really see, unless it's just going to devolve into war. I'm sorry to go there, but I'm like, you know, the people, I mean, I don't know how much they expect. You know, like those Spanish citizens now are in debt, like he said, you know, more, and they're just going to pile on more debt. And the yields and the costs are going up in Italy. I mean, it is just...
Well, you know, you mentioned the little three-letter word, war.
Well, I don't want to go there.
No, no, you don't. But the fact of the matter is, for those of us who pay attention to annoying little things like history, it cannot be said that... Well, I mean, the fact of the matter is that there have been wars that... And I kind of alluded to this the other night. There have been wars that have erased entire generations from the European continent that were started over far less.
Yeah, so I don't know. I just, you know, it just seems like all the little Band-Aids are lasting for less and less time. I mean, this $125 billion is nothing. It's whatever gains they thought they'd make in the market has already dissipated from what I can tell. If all the financing costs are at the same or higher than what they were before last weekend. So, anyway, I don't know. I just, you know, all that stuff is just really doing my head in. It's too over the top. But anyway, I just recently refound the Bus Boys. That shit is fantastic.
I'm ashamed to say, I listened to them, you know, back in the 80s, and they were an amazing band.
Yeah, well, no, just the irony of minimum wage work is great, because he talks about he works in the kitchen, but he has Jesus or God in him, and rich people must be unhappy. I mean, it's just fantastic sort of piss take on it, but it's just timeless, because you wouldn't know if that song didn't come out the other day. Shit.
And that is the mark of great music.
And then this other song is just it's a piss take too with the coach. I was just like, what? I forgotten about that one too.
Yeah, and I know you were sitting there watching the game last night.
No, that shit was, you know, I have to laugh, you know. I'm, you know, LeBron, it's like, dude, he put on a clinic the other, you know, against Boston, and then this happens. But I'm not going to go too hard on it, because listen, seven games they played, and then they have to fly into, you know, okie doke, and deal with them people who are like, what, 15? I know they're a bit older, but you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You know, it's on and cracking.
No, they're youngins. That team is youngins.
Yeah. And that Durant is like, excuse me? You know? So
somebody carry a letter to LeBron that Kevin Durant ain't laying down.
Oh God! So we'll see how this pan. I mean, you know.
Well, did you? You know, Marty asked. Did you read the Zirin article?
No, see, I didn't get a chance to, because I have it on my, you know, bookmark, and I have to read it, because I know that the Oklahoma situation is just nasty. But you broke it down quite well without rehashing it. The sort of, we want taxpayer money for our billionaire toys, and all we're going to give you is $8 an hour job and just be happy with it. I mean, it's the fact that these cities do it over and over again, it just is an indication of where manufacturing used to be. Now this is what the city founders.
Right, your $30 an hour job has become an $8 an hour job, selling popcorn.
Right, and we're still enriching a few people. I mean, this is plantation economics. This is what this is. The thing in Santa Clara is beyond disgusting when you think about right next door. They voted to decimate benefits for public workers in San Jose.
Yeah, and also Marty asked earlier. He said, "Should Sandra call?" Ask her to tell you about Blue Diamond in Sacramento.
Oh, God. I mean, that's just ongoing. You know, I'm not really up on the latest, but the last time I went to a progressive Democrat meeting, that's always an issue. And I don't know what the... I don't know.
Well,
what
I mean, drop a little background, would you?
Well, with the... I just know that they're constantly trying to unionize, and it never seems to work out.
I mean, this is like the company that produces the homey, folksy ads about all we ask is, you know, eat one almond a day or something.
Yeah, and they, you know, they're constantly sort of not dealing with their workers, and there's like a lot of accidents there. I mean, I don't really know all the details, but I just know that it's, you know, in a constant sort of state of, I don't know, it's just not a great place to work.
And it stays a mess. Well, when Marty said that, I didn't know what he was alluding to, but I saw Blue Diamond. I was, oh no, not the almonds.
Yeah, well, no, I mean, it's big business here, and I mean, I'll see if I can dig a little bit more, because I don't know if they've had any recent developments, but I know it's just not, you know, a very nice place. That's for sure.
Well, I'll tell you, I think you will find it telling to go back and read the Zirin column. And I don't want to ruin it for anybody, but there is a passage in there. I mean, if you ever wanted a picture of the absolute obscenity of the 1%, Dave Zirin recounts the story of a dinner in that column that will make you gag. Just reading that, I mean, he is a very persuasive writer, and he's got me about half okay if LeBron gets his ring.
Yeah, oh no, I can only imagine, you know, because look where it is. And then what happened with the Seattle, you know, all that leaves a bad taste for sure, but, yeah, Zirin is always good with the sort of breaking down the economics of these stadiums. He's been writing about that for years.
And so, right, you know, $870 million in Santa Clara?
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it boggles the mind, especially when, like you said, they're quite happy to decimate public services, you know?
I mean, where would they like to take... I mean, because this is not a story I've been following, where would they threaten to take the Niners? Bogalusa?
Well, no, to me, it's just...
L.A.? I mean, would they do the Oakland-L.A. Walk? I mean...
No, listen, it's all smoke and mirrors, because if they could get a team in L.A., they would have done it by now. That is the truth. You see what I'm saying? Because it's a giant market. So if the glorious NFL could have a team there, they would. So that constant threat is just a joke when it's made to these poor cities that are, like, desperate to keep these teams, you know? Because L.A., thank you very much, seems to be doing quite well.
I mean, I'm just trying to imagine the Niners threatening to move to Memphis.
Oh, you know what? Bye-bye. They're leaving San Francisco. They're leaving Candlestick because the San Francisco said, you know, well, they didn't say, but I'm saying it for them, don't let the door. You know what I'm saying?
they made the pitch to San Francisco, and San Francisco sent them crickets?
Well, San Francisco tried. God, they've been working on something for years. And even when I was living in San Francisco, which was a long time ago, they were trying to make a deal to build something new. So,
I guess historically, the Niners originally played out at what, the Presidio or something, and then they built the Stick.
Yeah, I don't know how old the Stick is, and it is quite nasty, but. You know, it's just a priority. I think that, San Francisco is the kind of city that, well, yeah, we like the Niners, but it's San Francisco.
Right. The Niners don't define San Francisco the way the Packers define Green Bay.
Right. I mean, I'm not saying that that it won't be an economic hit, but I would say.
But that's the thing. That's the thing. Based on all the data I've seen, it wouldn't be an economic hit.
Right, and I would say that because the last time they worked on a deal, you know, San Francisco offered to give them all sorts of land and all kinds of concessions, and it still wasn't enough, because enough is when the taxpayers take all the risk. That's
right.
Enough.
Right.
Okay, so San Francisco said, bye-bye, and I guess Santa Clara is willing to take it on. I mean, Santa Clara, I just don't understand why. Anyway,
I find a little teensy bit of irony, Sandra, in the fact that it's Santa Clara, because after all, the origin of the very concept of corporate personhood originates as a mere clerical footnote in Santa Clara versus Union Pacific Railroad.
Well, yeah, it's all California, yeah.
And so, you know, it's just a little asterisk dropping down from the heavens from the goddess of irony.
Well, you know, the Giants, I mean, mind you, they gave that land to AT&T or whoever owns that, whatever stadium there, the new one. But it's more private money than public, and it's a beautiful stadium. It's fantastic, and when you go there to watch a game, you can rest assured that, you know, you're just being entertained, and it's not sucking the city of San Francisco dry.
Right, and I think that's an important part of this discussion, Sandra, is to remember, as I tried to point out, that when we talk about the pillaging of the commons, we're not just talking about, I don't know, letting Monsanto build a plant on top of Old Faithful. You see what I'm saying? That when we give away $870 million in tax breaks, that is a very, very equally plain manifestation of the pillaging of the commons.
Well,
because that's $870 million you don't have to do for the citizens with.
Well, I'm happy to report that, you know, they bent over royally in Sacramento, and it still wasn't enough, and so the deal here is dead. And yes, I'm saying it. Goodbye. I don't care about the Kings. You know, screw them. Because they were trying to run a game on the citizens here, and we already voted no twice, you know, for their little tax hike. And so it was just never ending. But I think now it's finally dead. So I'm glad to report that.
And by the way, one of your favorite people, David Stern.
Yeah.
Did you see where he caught he and Jim Rome got into it today?
Oh yeah, no. Isaac sent that to me. I was howling because he don't even know. I mean, Jim Rome don't care. The more controversy, the better for his sort of dumbass clone routine. That's tired. So I'm sure he welcomes the controversy.
Have a take and don't suck. Right.
Well,
yeah.
It's kind of like, how old are you, Jim?
Right, and what is he? What is he? 50 now? 55?
Well, he must be 46 or something. But I don't know. I used to find that kind of amusing, but now it's kind of, yo, it's a bit not what a near 50 year old should be going on about. But anyway, I'll stop on Jim Rome. But what happened? Who won the?
Well, I don't know that anybody won, but the coverage that I'm seeing tends to come down harder on Stern than on Rome.
Oh, right.
Because
yeah, okay.
it all has to do with the NBA lottery and this sneaking suspicion that everybody has, as the article I read, that the NBA had its thumb on the scale for New Orleans.
Well, because they own the team. That's why everyone's fish-eyeing it, because it's not owned by, you know, one percenter. It's owned by the league, so of course.
Who just sold it off?
Well, oh, okay. Well, I knew it was something tricky about. And plus, they stopped the trade. You know, when Paul could have gone to L.A., they said no, and so L.A. didn't get that point guard. You know, so it's been shady for a while, I guess. But didn't he say, "Are you still beating your wife for something crazy?"
Yeah. Because Rome wouldn't walk away from the question from him. Offering the, well, of course we didn't. And Rome presses it again. Well, when did you stop beating your wife?
Oh, shoot. Well, that's funny. I missed that whole
thing. Oh, and by the way, Andy offered up a little bit of background on the whole Blue Diamond thing. He says the Blue Diamond plant is part of the San Francisco Getty fortune.
Oh, okay.
The workers, many from Mexico and Latin America, have had a tough time getting a union in place. There's also the complication that some of the workers may not be documented, so management uses a heavy hand to suppress union organizing and dissuade workers from getting involved in the union movement. You get involved with the union and you lose your job. And then Andy says, as Sandra says, the saga seems to never end at the Sacramento plant. And you know what that reminds me of more than anything else? You remember the meatpacking plant story out of Iowa from a few years ago? It was I forget the name of the company, but it was a Kosher Meat Works, and they were using undocumented labor, and they had repeatedly used really, really dirty illegal tactics. Shalom Rubashkin was the guy, and he's doing prison time now. It was one of the ones where there was a pleasant outcome, because you know he went to the stir over the way that they were treating working people. But it was there was this huge raid. They took people who were alleged to be undocumented and literally rounded them up in cattle pens at the state fairground somewhere in Iowa. Oh, it was a filthy thing. But yeah, they used the same kind of tactics, shorting wages and threatening to turn people into the ICE men if they made any union-y noises. And then, of course, but you know, these stories are legion, and it's only a function of memory that, what was it, a Hormel plant or an Armour plant, where I remember this story very clearly. They were the Icemen went in and separated out the workers from by light skinned versus dark skinned, and decided that the light skinned people were here legally and the dark skinned people weren't, even when some of the dark skinned Latinos had union cards that you can't get without proof of citizenship.
Well, you know, but that reminds me, you know that they're speculating that the Supreme Court is going to uphold some of the more odious aspects of the Arizona law. Have you heard this?
Yeah, I have, and it's incredibly disturbing.
Well, and it goes hand in hand with your sort of race to the bottom with the state, like they do with the tax credits for these corporations. Well, it's the same situation with the immigration laws. I mean, that's the whole thing.
And I find it interesting that they are willing to do that blue pencil routine with SB 1070 in Arizona, and yet the conventional wisdom with regard to the Affordable Care Act is that it either all stands or it all falls.
Well, I'm sort of, you know, but, I don't know. I kind of think, you know, there's a lot of, you know, interesting polls popping up and all kinds of stuff. The pressure's on the Supreme Court, so we'll see if they overturn that.
I can't forget Anton and Scalia. You don't expect us to read all this, do you?
Well, yeah, but you know, I think the bite that they're feeling behind the Citizen United is interesting because I listened to this interview with Sheldon Whitehouse. I guess he's one of the senators in Rhode Island.
Yeah,
and he was describing it, you know, in very stark terms, that they use, they use skills that they didn't have, like assuming that a disclosure would happen, and now it hasn't happened, and they're looking like right idiots with this United decision, and he was comparing it to Plessy and all the other sort of horror decisions that have come down.
And yet, have you noticed that the insurance companies have come out?
They ain't saying shit.
Yeah. Well, they've come out in a couple of days. Well, we'll keep some of the nicer provisions.
No, it's going to unravel if it's not held up. So, I mean, we'll see. But, I think that they may not look at the polling, but, you know, remember, I forget the quote with Alexander Hamilton and the Federalist 78. You know, they don't have no sword. They don't have no purse. You know what I mean?
Right.
So I think the Supreme Court is definitely on a downslope right now as far as what kind of institution they're viewed as. But anyway, listen, I'm sort of in the middle of trying to move, if you can imagine.
Oh, no.
Yeah, gotta go.
All right. Take it easy, Sandra. See ya.
Bye.
Bye now. Sandra calling from California. Onward we go. Hey, welcome to the program. And nobody? Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, Bob, it's Jeremy in Burlington, Vermont.
Well, hey, Jeremy, how you doing?
Not too bad. I called because I heard the other day you talking about, first off, I'm one of the legion out here that's not ready to say President Romney. Not even close to saying that.
I tried a couple of times, and it turns into vomit.
I completely understand, and I know he's got the welcome to Walmart mentality. He'd like to see everyone working at Walmart, Target, or Kmart. He'd love to see that.
Absolutely.
That's his wet dream. That would be what he wants to see happen. And I can tell you from my own experience working at Walmart for a stint, when you go through training, it is no shit. They try to push a non-union video on you.
Oh, yeah. In fact, it's compulsory viewing, isn't it?
You have to watch it, otherwise you can't even work for them. And I remember I was in my teens at the time. I'm in my 30s now, but in my teens, it was good almost 10, 12 years ago. And I sat down, and I'm raised in a family with all union workers, state workers, train workers, you name it. They've all been union workers. And I sat down and basically told them, this is pretty much effing propaganda that you're doing this. And they said, well, no, this is how the company works, and this is what we believe in. So I said, okay, whatever. I just kind of laughed through it, and I watched it. And I mean, it's true. And I worked there for, I think, probably the better part of a year, for $8.50. Now, I am one of the many that experienced the whole, when you're done working, you're not done working. I remember...
Right, you have to work off the clock.
Yeah, you punched out, and then you went back to receiving and picked up all the returns for the day and put them back on the shelves. And that could be for another 2 hours. And now I think about, actually I was a minor at the time, so I didn't have to do that as long as other people did. But I remember shortly after I got done there, they were sued in Florida for that, and they lost mega... like $25 million, which is nothing to them, but they lost that to a group of people down to sue them for that.
Well, because even in a place like Florida, that's a rather overt violation of the wage and hour laws.
Well, yeah, no, completely. But I distinctly remember being part of having that happen, being told to punch out and go restock the shelves, and I've always remembered that. And I don't know if you caught it. At some point, it was either, I think it was early this year or very late last year, I told my lawyer about this, that there was a Target that opened in somewhere in New York, and the workers decided they wanted to go union, and Target said, oh, hell no, close the doors and left the state.
Yeah.
They just closed up shop and fired everyone and left the state.
And, you know, they did, didn't they do the same thing? Well, this is typical practice for them. It is corporate culture for them, Jeremy, because way back when, you know, they used to have people. Walmart used to have a meat cutting shop, and way back when, some butchers in Texas voted to unionize.
Well, they still have a meat shop, Bob. It's the workers.
Right. Well, I mean, right. I mean, they've got a meat case, but. You can't get a ham sliced at Walmart.
Right.
You either buy the ham that Walmart has, or you go somewhere else.
Right.
They don't grind any hamburger there. It comes vacuum sealed with a little label that says, with flavor added. And for all I know, that's pink slime or water to add. Because I learned early on, if I bought a hamburger at Walmart, it shrank more than most, and it was full of liquid. But the point was, those butchers in Texas voted to unionize, so rather than recognize a single union shop, they shut down the meat cutting operations in every Walmart in the United States and retooled so that everything comes in pre-cut. I would not buy, and of course I'm sure the vegetarians and the vegans would say, well, you know, it's a step in the right direction, Bob. I would not buy a cut of meat from Walmart if it was the last cut of meat. In this county, in this state, or in this nation?
My girlfriend shops at Walmart. I try not to. I'm not free from sin. I shop there occasionally for an electronic when they can beat Best Buy or something, but I try very little to shop with these people just for multiple things I know they do.
I used to go there because I could get 100% Colombian decaf, and I've explained this before, that I couldn't get over at the Union Kroger shop. But you know, lucky for me, anything that I start buying, Walmart immediately discontinues, so I have no reason to go in there.
That's fortunate. I wish I could say the same most of the time. But I was going to say, I know back when Sam Walton was alive, even they treated their truck drivers back then better.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yes. Walmart became the evil thing. I mean, Sam was never a friend to working people. I remember when his first and oldest employee died a few years ago and died without a pension, without health care, you know, the Walmart way. But he also moved into communities very, very slowly. But after he died, I mean, the cancer metastasized. Because the Walton heirs, each of whom became worth something like $27 billion apiece, suddenly decided that $27 billion wasn't enough and it needed to be 50 or maybe 100.
Right. What I was trying to say was that back when Sam was still alive, he did have a slightly better policy. Not that he was ever really the working man's friend, but his truck drivers could park on the premises and have a safe place to sleep at night between deliveries. Nowadays, they can't be seen on the premise unless the back dock unloading and then you're going out of that place. And that was
right, and don't let the door hit you. Exactly.
So pretty much, once you're done, I don't want to see you, you're a dirty truck driver. And that kind of stuff sickens me when I think about it. And then I think there was a story last year about his daughter or something being a DWI crash or pulled over with DWI, and she basically can buy her way out of it and say she's sorry, sorry, sorry. And we all know that money can buy your freedom sometimes. In her case, it probably will.
Yeah, without a doubt. Without a doubt.
It just sickens me, but I don't have much else. Just
to let me thank you. Let me thank you for your offer of contacting your congressional delegation about the ACT Act. I really appreciate it.
I actually did. I have a friend who works directly for Bernie, and I asked her to ask him to be a original co-signer of it. So we'll see what happens.
If he was to be an original and introduce it in the Senate, it would be magnificent. We've already
Bernie's
been.
Bernie's a powerhouse in Vermont. We love him up here. We're not going to trade him for anybody.
I'd sure like to have a Bernie down here. I can't begin to tell you. I'm jealous.
He's a good guy.
All right. Take care, Jeremy. Good to hear from you.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Bye now. Yeah. About 8.5 minutes before the hour, and I guess for the most part that takes care of this prayer meeting Wednesday edition of the Horn. More stories, things we could have gotten into, but we will save them, I guess, for a thorn in the side Thursday. Just a little note, and I hate to do this, but I gotta. We live by this. Well, not live by, but this continues to exist. This little experiment in broadcasting. By virtue of listener contributions. Between last night and tonight, there has been one. And we are extremely grateful for that. But when we go 2 days without any input, it begins to get a little dodgy because, you know, we didn't put that $2,500 number out there arbitrarily. It's what it takes to keep this going from month to month. If we were putting out a number that paid people, we would be trying to raise something on the order of $15,000 or $20,000 a month because that's what people are worth. And we would have never made it through the second year of broadcasting. So if you can hit the PayPal button, it would be much appreciated if you did. It's at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. They both work equally well, and we are very much appreciative, all of us, for your support that keeps this going. So, if you can, and if you please. Closing out with a note from Michael in Norway. He says, with regards, and this is a comment that I made earlier in the program, he said, with regards to looking back at these times in which we live from the future, I wouldn't disregard the possibility of the Horn becoming an important historical resource. In that sense, the archives at White Rose Society could be considered a journal of the times in America from a liberal perspective. I hope, says Michael, the Horn journals are well backed up. I don't like the thought of these neo-fascists gaining absolute control, perhaps seeking to wipe such an important document of the time. Keep your podcasts stored, Hornies. They might be important someday. And that is so very true. And thank you for the input, Michael. I think about that a lot. I think about things like redundancy. And we have next to no redundancy. When I have to go away, there's seldom any, because, you know, John Fox is one of the very few people I would turn the microphone over to, and he is very busy these days working on some amazing projects that I hope we can share with you soon that you will greatly enjoy. When I go away, we run reruns. And I'm sorry for that, but there's no redundancy. I was reading today about we've been experimenting with some Skype calls, and they sound pretty good. But I was reading today about a new box from the Comrex Corporation, which we've got one of here, and is, it will officially be 7 years old next month. And it's been repaired two or three times, and, well, you know the drill. They've got a new box out that would be wonderful to have because it is certified for all... this thing's just supposed to handle plain old telephone service. And we have some problems sometimes. But the new thing is certified for VoIP and POTS and Skype and all manner of stuff. And wow! Wouldn't that be cool? But it ain't going to happen anytime soon. Because our focus remains squarely in the realm of just keeping the wolf off the porch. Keeping the lupine pest away from the door. It all works out to about 5 cents per hour of broadcasting. So it's still, as compared with some, it's a pretty good bargain. It's a great bargain. If it was a quarter an hour, if you compare it to the likes of the right-wing filth that pours into the public's airwaves every day, it's a huge bargain. And it is amazing because it happens because you insist that it continue to happen. And for that, we remain thankful. So have a wonderful remainder of your day or your evening, and we will get together tomorrow at 6 p.m. Eastern Time for Thorn in the Side Thursday. My thanks go out to you first and foremost for keeping this on the air, and more importantly, for sharing that most finite and precious of things, your time. It is amazing and humbling. My thanks, of course, go out to our all-volunteer staff, Lottie and Sparky, our moderators in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to our blogger, Texas Betsy, to Reverbo operating behind the possum line and deep cover behind the cornbread curtain, to John Fox, previously mentioned, for all that he does, and to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Everything that happens here goes through a White Rose server. And you receive it because of the undying dedication of Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. Thanks, of course, always go out to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and StopTheAche.org. Go to both places. Learn about the AIC campaign. Learn about what you can do to help stop Appalachia's agony. It's as simple as a phone call to your elected representative, your member of the House of Representatives in the Congress of the United States, and it is much appreciated. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you.
Smith is next on The Horn.
With America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! A minute past the hour, a minute past six here in the Eastern Time Zone. On the 14th day of June 2012. Good evening, good afternoon, good morning, wherever you may be. Good day, Earth. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is the Head On Radio Network, The Horn, headonradionetwork.com. A little slice of what we call conversation radio, and welcome to it. The Horn is available to you. Just by way of a reminder, depending on how you're listening, on a variety of platforms. We have, for instance, the home website itself, headonradionetwork.com, where there are a couple of different ways to listen. We have whiterosesociety.org, where you can listen to the stream, or, as well, the home of the Horn Podcasts. Podcasting and live streaming available at iTunes Radio and iTunes as well. And streaming available at Stitcher Internet Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, and a variety of other platforms that I have not yet had time to research. We're out there. We're everywhere. And it is free and easy for you to listen or for you to recommend to others that they listen. This, of course, is what we call Thorn in the Side Thursday. And I got a feeling. It's going to be a big one. Or a long one. Or a big long one. Leave alone, Bob. We do, we've still got spillover and leftover material from the night before. See, that's what happens when, especially in a political season, when you are simply awash in morans, right-wing weirdos, repiglickins. But, you know, one of the other things, we also pay attention here, to here are the ordinary rights of ordinary people. And with that, I wanted to mention a new report that is out lately. Bring it to your attention and perhaps suggest that you might want to take action accordingly with it, because it's a means of making some of your consumer choices. And you know, I hate that word consumer, right? But making some of your consumer choices a little bit more ethical. What am I talking about? I can answer that. I have it right here. The name of the organization issuing the report is ROCK. And ROCK stands for Restaurant Opportunities Centers United. They are a group that is concerned about and dedicated to the rights of some of the most oppressed, some of the most put upon, some of the most hard-worked people in this country, namely restaurant workers. It's a brutal business, and it's brutally hard work. You may recall a couple of weeks ago, a couple of days ago, our buddy Ron in Raleigh mentioned such practices as wage theft, working off the clock, that sort of thing. Well, it turns out that that is notoriously prevalent inside the restaurant industry. May I suggest that there's one place you don't want to get anywhere near on this list of so-called ethical restaurants? Among those scoring the very lowest is an outfit called Darden Restaurant Group. They are, of course, a conglomerate that runs a number of different national chains. They own Red Lobster, Capital Grill, Longhorn Steakhouse, and Olive Garden, among other things. They are, according to people who have worked there, notorious for wage theft, for discrimination, having people do what is called side work, such as rolling silverware, filling salt and pepper shakers, and other custodial duties, as they're described, without clocking in and being paid to do it. It is theft. It is a violation of the wage and hour laws of almost every state. Darden also asks people who work for tips, and therefore a much, much lower hourly rate, to go ahead and do work that people who are not tipped and have a higher hourly rate should be doing. It is a fact that 7 of the 10 lowest paid jobs in the United States are restaurant jobs. It's hot, it's sweaty, it's heavy weight lifting, cumbersome, dangerous, and restaurant customers are not the friendliest people in the world. And yet at the same time, someone waiting tables always has to meet you with a smile, as if it is the absolute signal joy of their day that you and your little tribe of munchkins have walked into the establishment to dine with them. Oh, rapture, oh, joy, they smile. While